From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. This Sunday is Juneteenth, a day to celebrate the end of slavery in the United States. It commemorates June 19, 1865, when a Union Army general brought word to enslaved people in Galveston, Texas, that they had legally been freed. This was 2 months after Lee surrendered at Appomattox Courthouse and 2 years after Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation ended slavery in the rebel states, including Texas. Here in Illinois, ostensibly a free state, there was nevertheless a limited form of slavery before the Civil War. Sundiata Chajua is a professor of African American Studies and History at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. He wrote a book about an Illinois town founded by people fleeing slavery in Missouri called America's First Black Town, Brooklyn, Illinois, 1830 to 1915. My Illinois Public Media colleague Emily Hayes spoke with Chajua about how the history of Brooklyn reflects Illinois' history of slavery and emancipation. Chajua began by talking about the founder of Brooklyn, a woman named Priscilla Baltimore.
She was what they called an exhorter, meaning I guess today you'd say evangelist. She didn't have a church. She gave her sermons out in the woods and that kind of thing. But she built up a tremendous following. She was the information that we have, best we can tell, she was the product of an enslaver and a woman that he had enslaved. She, through her exhorting, raises money, and she's able to buy her freedom. She and her husband and their children, right, they lead 11 families. Some of these families are people who are enslaved, and some of them are the quasi-free. And they come out of St. Louis, Missouri area, cross the river, come over into the American bottoms, right, wilderness. This is in the, I estimate that is 1830, right, that winter of 1830. And they begin to construct a community. She eventually, when Brooklyn is platted by 5 white abolitionists out of Alton, it's a majority black space, right? And she leads in the formation of what was initially the Brooklyn AME Church, and then it becomes Quinn Chapel. And it's named Quinn Chapel after William Paul Quinn. William Paul Quinn is the first AME minister who's authorized by the AME bishops to go west of the Alleghenies to spread the word of African Methodism. So Paul Quinn, along with Priscilla Baltimore, one of the things that they do is that they routinely go into St. Louis at night and help people escape, right? Regain, you know, freedom-seeking folk, they help them regain their freedom.
What happened after enslaved people escaped to Brooklyn? How did they defend themselves? Because I'm guessing the slave owners weren't happy about people escaping.
You got slave catchers going all over these states that border the South. In fact, yeah, they go up into New York. They go all over to capture and return. And they also will, if they can, grab a free person, a quasi-free person, and sell them into slavery, right? The Solomon Northup's narrative, what they made into the film 12 Years a Slave, which is also the title of his narrative, speaks to that. But there are lots of examples. So the Singleton family, at least one son was captured and sold into enslavement further south, and evidence suggests that the mother was as well. Now, that's one of the founding families in Brooklyn, one of the founding families, one of those 11 families. So you got, you know, those as clear examples of people who gain their freedom through their own activity, right? Priscilla Baltimore, they flee. You know, she's free, but a lot of those other 11 aren't, and they come across the river. You've got, in the case of the Singleton family, John, the one that was, he goes to court, And he sues two of his slaveholders. And in the second suit, not only is he granted a return of his liberty, but the judge awards him damages. The damages, in terms of back pay, is a penny. It's a penny. Come on.
This is The 21st. I'm Emily Hayes. I'm talking with University of Illinois history professor Sundiata Chajua about Brooklyn, Illinois. It was founded by abolitionists and people escaping slavery, and it faced raids by slave catchers. I can't even imagine what it would have been like in Brooklyn, Illinois. You know, one of your founding families, someone who's really central to the community, gets kidnapped. Do we know anything about how people reacted, or did people ever take up arms to defend their community?
Of course they armed themselves. You know, they don't have a choice but to defend and protect their community. So it wasn't uncommon. I mean, you know, you just stop and think about where Brooklyn is located along the Mississippi River, and it's easy to see. And you know that, you know, from Alton, all those communities were engaged in, you know, helping those people who had self-emancipated find ways to move up further, or in the case of Brooklyn, they often stayed because of the nature of that community. Brooklyn emerges early on. Its founding is as an anti-slavery community.
Do you want to highlight any, like, you know, Juneteenth-type celebrations from Brooklyn that you researched?
Yeah, you know, it's 1893. This is a celebration that the Brooklyn community puts on, but it brings in Black people from other parts of Illinois, Springfield, Chicago, actually 10 different cities, and it brings in people from St. Louis. Now, what's significant about this celebration is that even though Brooklyn was a community that, from its platting, right, was 7/8 Black, when it becomes an official village under Illinois charter, white people control the town council by one, right? What is it, 4-3 or something like that, 3-2, whatever. Because even though they are a distinct minority, they're still wealthy, right? They own a large number of the businesses. And, you know, that brings power and influence. But in 1886, a guy by the name of John Evans, who's a fascinating historical character, right? Working class guy, starts, he's born a slave in Virginia, makes his way upon independence. So by 1807, he's moved into Brooklyn, and he's trying to be a small farmer, and not successful. Like a number of small farmers are forced, once the packing plants begin, to go to work in the packing plants, right? While working in the packing plant, he runs for the Brooklyn Town Council, and apparently, he's the most dynamic figure because the town council then votes a board president, right? Not a mayor, a board president. And he runs with a slate of other Black folk, and they take control. And now they have a 4-3 majority, or, you know, whatever. They now have a majority.
What does John Evans do after securing political power for the Black majority in Brooklyn, Illinois?
He begins to do restoration in the city, paving the roads, putting up electric streetlights. But he also is a firm political activist, not just a politician. So he's a leader in what's called the Illinois Protective Association. So that there's a number of these groups, these organizations, there's at least 12 or 13 in the state of Illinois. And the purpose is to defend the African-American community. And by defense, that's, you know, file suits all the way to get your guns, right? And so What he does is he sets up a meeting of the Illinois Protective Association in Brooklyn the day after the Emancipation Celebration, so people come to the Emancipation Celebration. So he has a huge one. He has a famous band out of St. Louis come and lead the parade, and he's just built a new city hall, and so it's a fantastic thing. It's covered by the major black newspaper in the state coming out of Springfield, right? And so it becomes this large affair. And while it's held in a church, but they march to City Hall. Yeah.
What kind of band was it?
They don't describe the music. What we do know is that the spirituals are sung by a church choir. So it's probably ragtime, you know, because that would have been the dominant black music in this era. So I would suspect that's what they're playing because it's a popular band.
If you're just joining us, this is The 21st. I'm Emily Hayes. I'm talking with University of Illinois history professor Sundiata Chajua about Juneteenth celebrations in Brooklyn, Illinois. Brooklyn was one of the first all-black towns to be incorporated in the U.S., and the town has been celebrating some version of Juneteenth since at least 1893. Dr. Chajua, would you want to talk about what has happened to Brooklyn since then? These days, the town has fewer than 500 residents.
Brooklyn, even though it has a different origin than the majority of all black towns, its economic development has mirrored the development of the black towns in the West. And what I mean by that is this. Brooklyn was built in an area that was quickly industrialized. So the African Americans who lived in Brooklyn, they took jobs in the meatpacking industry at the stockyards in National City. National City is a capitalist invention, you know. They just created a town structure so that they wouldn't have to pay taxes to East St. Louis or Brooklyn. But it meant that population was highly proletarianized, where most black towns were agricultural.
You said Brooklyn had a different economic base than most all-black towns, but the trajectory afterwards has been similar. How so?
If you read the history of the black towns out west, many of them decline, begin a sharp decline on the basis that they located themselves in the space where one would have logically thought the railroad terminus would be. But in every instance, railroad owners chose to pass by the black town, even if it had the most favorable geographic location, and spend more money to go around it into a white town, right? Brooklyn suffers that same exact fate. A railroad that's going to be the terminus on the Illinois side, and then you got to take the bridge, right? Should have, by all logic, located in Brooklyn. It doesn't. Brooklyn eventually has a roundhouse from that railroad that's just on its outskirts. So it does have some relationship there in terms of employment, but no major industry locates in Brooklyn, right? The stockyards, but for that invention, a National City, Brooklyn or East St., right? But probably Brooklyn because it's close to Brooklyn. So these towns were deprived of economic resources. Their populations, the men worked as largely menial laborers in the stockyards. The women worked largely as domestic servants in the homes of white people in those outside of Brooklyn, right? What that then meant is that it didn't develop an economic base. And as you see, in the case of Brooklyn, it's thriving, though. until the Great Depression. And after the Great Depression, you just see it wind down. And so, you know, there's that question of economic forces. So you had this contradiction. On the one hand, you had the achievement of political independence, meaning this, that a chartered municipality has certain governing rights, right? So while it's not true independence, but it is the same semi-autonomy that any municipality that has home rule rights have, okay? But that right, that very positive achievement is undermined by economic underdevelopment because it's constantly passed by and efforts of its own to develop are stifled.
Okay. Is there anything else you want to mention?
No, I think that's good.
Thank you so much.
My Lord, what a morning.
Sindieta Chajua is a professor of African American Studies and History at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. He spoke with my Illinois Public Media colleague, Emily Hayes. This is The 21st Show. More to come. Stay with us.
When the stars begin.